Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Welcome to One Bills Live. We hope you guys are enjoying your Friday afternoon. Maddie Glab here alongside of Steve Tasker. And for hour number two, we are happy to be joined by NFL Film senior producer Greg Cosell, who's also the co-host of ESPN's NFL Matchup. Greg Cosell's weekly appearance on One Bills Live is presented by Pepsi. Pepsi is the official soft drink of the Buffalo Bills. Food deserves Pepsi. All right, Greg, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing good. We're happy good. Thanksgiving. Thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, we were happy to have some football yesterday. But before we look ahead to Buffalo's game against the Steelers, we haven't talked to you since the Bills played the Texans. Now, that feels like it was ages ago because it was on Thursday Night Football last week. What did you make of that unfortunate outcome of the game? The Bills lost to the Texans, and Josh Allen was sacked 8 times, the most in his career.
Yeah, it was not a good watch if you're a Bills fan, obviously. You're dealing in a situation there's so many facts. It's really a trifecta. Because, you know, to me, the Bills pass game in terms of their concepts, I think they need more. I think they need to expand their pass game concepts. So what you have is if Josh Allen doesn't feel like he can turn it loose right away, and he does have a tendency, obviously, to want to leave the pocket. That's just the way in which he plays. It's not likely to change. There's always going to be some throws that he probably should make that he doesn't. We've seen him many times make special plays when he does that. But when you're dealing with an O-line that really, really struggled, a pass game that just I think is probably not that hard tactically to defend, and a quarterback that will leave the pocket prematurely, it kind of all came together. Although I will say this, and this might sound like a bold, controversial statement, given what he did the week before, I actually thought Josh Allen overall, and I'm just isolating the quarterback play, mm-hmm. I actually thought he played just as well or better against the Texans than he did against Buffalo. Mm. Tampa.
Right.
You know,
right.
This game he almost had no chance on many plays. And I actually thought, you know, this is one of the few games where he truly was running for his life.
Yeah, and this team they're playing this week, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you look back at the season the Bills have gone through, teams that they've looked bad against, Atlanta, and then Houston, both of whom have outstanding pass rushes. And this Steelers team is kind of built like they may not be as good as Atlanta or maybe whatever, but the Steelers are built like those teams that the Bills have struggled with. And Deion Dawkins is not going to play. Spencer Brown is not going to play. I mean, this is, you know, you're looking at a recipe for disaster.
Well, you know, this is one of those games where I think you clearly have to structure your game plan to help your tackles.
Right.
Because, you know, especially when it's, you know, pure pass or third and long situations, because you just can't ask. I assume Ryan Vandermark's going to be one tackle,
yeah,
right?
That's what we're thinking.
We can only assume. They're being coy with who's starting and who's replacing. They've got Tylan Grable. They've got Alec Anderson. They've got Vandermark.
And Chase Lunt, the rookie.
Yeah.
So the point is whoever is out there is not going to be able to block with any, particularly if you have to take a little deeper drop. I'm not talking about first and 10 guys. I'm talking about those pure pass situations where you can't throw a 4-yard pass, you know,
right.
And you have to actually have to push the ball down the field a little. It would be unrealistic. And I don't think I'm saying anything profound to expect any one of those guys to block TJ Watt 101 in those kinds of situations. So now you have to deal with that in terms of your offensive game planning. You can do it multiple ways, Steve, and you know this. You can do it with formation. You put a tight end there, and it just sort of slows down TJ Watt. You can chip him. You can have a primary pass protector there as well, which means you're going to have one less eligible receiver, and that changes your pass game. So the point is, whatever you do – and by the way, is Highsmith due to play this week for Pittsburgh? I think he's been out, so I don't know if he's
Mike Tomlin just said he's good to go.
All right, so now you have a guy on the other side who's not bad either, by the way.
Right.
And so, you know, you're dealing in a situation that when you get into these long yardage situations, and they happen in every game, we're not going to sit here and say it's never going to be 3rd and 9, because it will be. You know, now you have to think about protection first. You can't go into this game saying, hey, Josh will take care of it because he can run around. You can't take that approach. You've got to protect. Because I learned very early, Steve, and you know this, I remember having a conversation many, many years ago with John Gruden, and one of the first things he said to me was, you don't have a pass game without protection. It's as simple as that.
Right. And now, in having said that as well, the thing that the Steelers have struggled with is their coverage. They're blowing coverages on a little bit of a regular basis. They look a little bit, they look a little bit older, long in the tooth. Now, there's some wisdom and some knowledge back there, but it doesn't seem like they're playing as a cohesive unit all the time. And if you're going to be able to take advantage of this Steeler defense, that may be the spot.
It's funny you say that, because that was the next point I was going to bring up. Watching the Steelers last week, which was really kind of a microcosm of the season, watching them against the Bears last week, there were so many voids in their zone coverage. It was almost, you knew something was not right. I mean, look, we all know, guys, that there's voids in every zone, because otherwise everybody would play the same zone. But their voids were so big, there's something was not right. And it's been like that all season long. So, again, you hope they don't get well this week, but you have to be able to attack them when they play zone. Because you're right, Jalen Ramsey is now pretty much a full-time safety. And as good and as smart a player as he is, he hasn't played a lot of full-time safety in his career. You know, it's a different deal. It's not the same as being, playing corner on the outside or playing the star position, that slot position, which he's played for so long. It's a totally different position when you're a post safety. So hopefully that they'll be able to exploit some of those voids and they'll still exist.
One of the reasons why Buffalo's offense has been a little bit disjointed as of the last few weeks has been their turnovers. They've had 3 turnovers in the last 3 games. What is going wrong with the fact that they're turning the ball over so frequently, and how can they see some improvement there against the Steelers team, who you don't want to miss out on possessions against them?
Well, you're getting into a tough spot because, you know, you're dealing with a quarterback who is really an aggressive player. And, you know, it's funny, last year, it's almost as if they truly reined him in, and it kind of worked, obviously. But I think at his core, Josh is really an aggressive player. And I think if he feels even more so that he has to do it by himself, I'm not saying he does or doesn't. I don't know what's in his head. But I think he's the kind of guy that's going to turn it loose and try to make plays if he feels like the game calls for it. I mean, look at the game against Tampa a few weeks ago, where on one of the early possessions, first or second, he tried to make that throw deep in his own end, which was just a bad decision. But those are the kinds of things he tries to do. You know, sometimes, look, I thought the interceptions this past week, which were two of the three turnovers, obviously, somehow he didn't see the underneath coverage by Toe Toe when he tipped the ball. You know, only he could tell you what he saw. I can, but he was sitting right in the passing lane. And believe it or not, I know it looked really bad, and it looked like they had a chance to win the game. And, Steve, I'd love your point of view on this. But I actually thought that last interception was not on Josh. He threw that ball when he expected Moore to cut in front of Bullock and cross his face. And after he released the ball is when Moore broke upfield. So and here we're looking at it right now. So it looks really bad, Steve, as a lot of interceptions do. But I actually did not think that was on Josh.
Yeah, well, you're right. And we may never know the real answer to that, but and like Peyton Manning has told me a number of times, every interception's got a story. Nobody wants to hear it.
Right. But then, and by the way, I still think he threw it to the wrong receiver, by the way.
Right.
And so I will say that because I don't want people to think, you know, I thought that he should have thrown it to Knox on the crosser because he was wide open off the mesh concept. Mm-hmm. But I still think that the interception itself, he expected Moore to cross the – now, I don't think it would have been complete, but it probably wouldn't have been intercepted.
Now, in this game, you kind of trying to get a feel of what the game might look like. Aaron Rodgers coming in, got a wrist injury on his non-throwing hand. They have – a big offensive line. You can bet that they don't want to put this game on the plate of Aaron Rodgers. They'd love to run the football.
No.
They go heavy a lot more than other people do. The Bills' run defense has a bad reputation for allowing a lot of yards. It kind of looks to me like this game might turn into a rock fight, right? You know, like one of those, you know, 12 to 10 games, you know, if you can score 10. I don't even know if you can. But you know what I mean? So, yeah, so is that kind of what you're seeing as well? I mean, the Steelers are going to come in, and they're – Tomlin's conservative.
Yes.
And the Bills, you know, they – go ahead.
Yeah, no. I look, they line up a lot with two and three tight ends. Darnell Washington, he may be listed at 265, but I have it on good knowledge. He's over 300 pounds, so he's basically another tackle, although they do throw it to him once in a while, and he's a big man. But you're right. They line up. They go heavy. They want to run the ball. Aaron Rodgers, and again, this is probably not on Aaron Rodgers. Maybe it's on Arthur Smith. I don't know the answer, but they rarely ever throw the ball between the numbers. This is not a team that works the middle of the field hardly at all to their wide receivers. So, again, unless there's a dramatic change this week, we have, 11 games, I guess, up to this point where they've hardly thrown the ball between the numbers. I think that it's the lowest number of throws between the numbers from like 10 to 20 yards in the league, you know. So, you know, that's what they've done up to this point. They want to be physical. They want to run the ball. They don't want to turn it over, obviously, but they sort of play like that. So you really have to make sure that you stop their run game and put them in long yarded situations.
How has DK Metcalf meshed into this offense, and how's he working with Aaron Rodgers?
You know, I don't really see it right now, Steve. I don't think they're comfortable together. You know, it's a hard question to answer. We don't know. We're not there, so we don't know, you know, how they interact and all that. But in terms of what I see on the field, he's not really the big factor in terms of volume targets that I think they hoped when they got him. I mean, every once in a while, can he take a short pass and take it to the house like he did a number of weeks ago for, you know, a 75 or 80-yard touchdown? Can he run by a corner because he's big and fat? Sure, and that can happen in any game. It just hasn't happened very much at all this season.
You spoke about Aaron Rodgers and that left wrist injury that he's dealing with and how the Steelers might want to run the football because of that. Well, Rodgers also has the second fastest time to throw in the league, so he gets the ball out really quick, and you would expect with an injury might try and get it out even quicker. As a defensive line, how do you effectively pressure a quarterback when you're going up against somebody like that?
Well, then it's hard, obviously, to get pressure, Maddie. So what you have to do, this is a classic case of where you got to get your hands up, that kind of thing, try to knock down balls. But now I think it's also incumbent upon the coverage. Mm. You have to study in great detail, which I know they do, all coaches do this, the kinds of routes that they run, make sure. They're not a big press man team, so they're all of a sudden, I don't think they're going to line up and play hardcore press. But then you have to have a great feel for routes so you can get into passing lanes and take away those throws. goes, because the last thing you want is him to get into a rhythm, even if they're 6-yard passes. You don't want him to feel comfortable that, hey, I'm getting the ball out, we're completing balls, and we're just getting into a rhythm. Then the run game becomes even more important, because if it's always 2nd and 3 or 3rd and 2, the run game stays a factor. So it's not so much the big explosive plays. They don't make a ton of those relative to the rest of the league, but you don't want them to feel that the run game can be a factor throughout the whole game.
Well, one of the things that happens, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you're going to get rush the passer like Aaron Rodgers, where you kind of think it's you're not going to get home, right? He's going to get rid of the football.
Right, right.
The problem is, if you don't act like you want to get there, he won't throw it.
Yeah.
He won't throw it, and
yes.
he extends the play, and he's not like he used to be,
right,
where he's running everywhere. But the guy's poised, right? And that's really what makes him so dangerous. If you don't force him to throw it, he won't. And then it extends the play, then you're off the page, and then all these bad things happen to your defense.
It's a great point, Steve, because that's sort of the corollary to him not throwing it is now all of a sudden you've got to cover for 5 or 6 seconds, and that becomes a big deal. And and he's obviously always had unbelievable vision. He can still see the field as well as anybody. He's super intelligent. So you're right. In a sense, you do want him to throw it, but you want to make sure that he can't get into a comfortable rhythm. So I'll be real curious to see what Sean McDermott and Babich and what they have in store here, how they want to go about playing, because it seems easy because you look at their stats and you go, oh boy, they're not a great passing team. But, the guy can still throw the ball really well. You just don't want him to start to feel really comfortable throwing it.
What's another matchup within this game that's important that is not being talked about enough right now?
Oh. To me, it's their defense and their front versus the Bills' offense. Because their front, it happens to be very good.
Right.
That's, we spoke about the edge players, but they're really good inside. Cano Benton's a really good player. Queen and Peyton Wilson plays in the nickel. He doesn't necessarily play in their base, but we'll see what they do. But he's a really good pass defender. He's long. He's athletic. I think their front 6 or their front 7, if they're in a base kind of 5-2 front, it's really good. It's just the back end where they really struggle. But, you have to make their back end be able to play in this game. But in order to do that, it gets back to our initial point. You got to protect. And that's – they've got to be able to get to their back end. If they can't get to their back end, it's going to be hard.
So the Bills are still they're number 1 in rushing yards a game in the league, and they're number 3 in rushing yards a play. Can they run it on this front?
I think they're going to try. They always do. The question is, can they have sustainability? Look, I know that Cook had the 45-yarder. I guess that ended the 1st or 2nd series, against Houston. You can't count on those plays, though, as you guys know. You can't say, well, Cook's going to break, a 45, 50-yarder and we'll be in great shape. So the question becomes sustainability. Can they run enough so that they stay ahead of the sticks? That's really the number one thing, because then you stay out of having Josh Allen to have deeper drops, the pressure becoming a factor. Can they run enough where, and of course it doesn't happen every play, but can you run enough where there's sustainability and, it's 2nd and 4 as opposed to 2nd and 8 or 9, where it's 3rd and 2 as opposed to 3rd and 8? To me, that becomes the big factor in how they choose to do it. Are they going to try to do it out of 11 personnel? Are they going to try to do it out of big people and play Gilliam a lot and Hawes a lot? How are they? Because I guess Kincaid, as we speak today, is questionable, right? We don't know.
Yeah,
he's
going to go. Questionable.
We do not know.
Questionable.
So let's assume he's not going to go. I mean, if he does, that's wonderful. But if he doesn't, the question is, are they going to play with Gilliam? Are they going to play with 2 tight ends? Are they going to try to spread him out? These are all things we don't know the answer to, but I'm very curious to see how they choose to run it, because this is not a defense, particularly with their tackles, where they can ask Josh by choice, as good as he can be, to drop back 40 times by choice.
Right.
This team is 7-4. The Buffalo Bills sitting at 7 right now in the conference standings. Yeah. Now, the next 3 weeks, including this week, Steelers, then Bengals, then Patriots. What do you need to see out of this group that you haven't seen consistently enough this season?
I know it's a tough go. Even playing the Browns have a really good defense, too, and then Philly. The defense, The defense, to me, is built on fundamental execution, and they're really good at changing the picture post-snap. They're one of the best teams. Sean McDermott's always been good at that. But it's really a defense built on the on execution, because they don't really have that dominant impact player at any level. I mean, I love the way Cole Bishop has developed, but, you know, we certainly aren't going to put him at the level of the best safeties in the league at this point. I think I loved him coming out of college. I think he can get there at some point, but I'm not sure we want to say that right now in his first full season as a starter. But I love the way he plays. I think he's smart, savvy. He's more athletic than people think. But they don't really have an impact player at any level. They've got solid players, but it's really about the fundamental execution of what they do. And that has to happen in this game, particularly with their run defense.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate your time. Appreciate you helping us break down this matchup against the Steelers on Sunday afternoon.
Steve, you're not saying they're going to score 30 right now?
I'm not going to say that this time. I said that last week, and I barely missed. So,
19 instead of 30.
I am an absolute reverse barometer for everything. Yeah. So, having said that, they'll probably hang 50 on these guys, because I think it's uphill battle.
It'll be one of those games.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Thanks,
appreciate
Greg.
It. Hope you have a great holiday weekend. Thank you.
You as well. All right, that was NFL Film senior producer Greg Cosell, also the co-host of the ESPN's NFL Matchup. Bills Mafia, it's tailgating season, and there's nothing better than an ice-cold Pepsi Zero Sugar to pair with your tailgating food rituals. As the great Josh Allen once said, Bills fans deserve Pepsi. Bills Mafia has brought it this season, and so has Pepsi. Bills tailgates deserve Pepsi. Go Bills. All right, we heard some good stuff from Greg. I mean, the matchups within this game really goes down to the line of scrimmage and what's going on in the trenches on both sides of the ball, both on the offensive line and defensive line for both teams. That's where it's going to start. That's what we hear from our head coach, Sean McDermott, all the time. Battle is won in the trenches.
We hear it all. We've said it so much over the course of this season and other years, where you got to win up front. You got to win the line of scrimmage. And we didn't win the line. We lost because we lost the line of scrimmage, the whole thing. And this is one where you think, man, they got to dig deep. Mm-hmm. Two backup offensive tackles. And then, you know, same thing with the Steelers. Their left tackle is out. At this point of the season, week 13, man, it's you got to dig deep to try and win
these
games.
You got to buckle up and get ready for
sure.
Yeah,
you really do.
And I really agree with what Sean McDermott said earlier when talking about the tackle position. And yes, experience is not going to be on the field as much as it would be if you had your starters, but you're going to make it up with grit. That's what I keep going back to when I'm thinking about the line play in this game. It's got to be gritty. It's got to be tough. You're going into the Steel City. Like, it's going to be cold out there. This is the time where you put your fingers in the grass and you go.
We don't know, because they haven't told us, and we're speculating everything. Vandermark's probably given – you might, having him talk like that about grit and, you know, compete and all that, it kind of points toward Alec Anderson.
That's true. You know? Alec is a great guy.
Because he's that kind of guy, right? We'll find out late soon enough.
All right, we got to take a break. We are going to be off air on TV, but still on the radio. So stay tuned. More coming up next on One Bills Live, presented by Clyde Health on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season. from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me on the West Her Hotline. Good morning, coach. I hope you and your family had an awesome Thanksgiving.
Well, we did. I appreciate that. Good morning to you and everyone out there, and hope that everyone had a great Thanksgiving as well, and you know, have a great weekend here.
Yeah, no doubt. On to Black Friday now, all the shopping that's going on, but you got a lot more things on going on this weekend. Obviously, the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, we'll get to that in just a moment. Obviously, it's been a bit of a different week because you had 10 days. Go back to last week against the Houston Texans. You came right out and said last week, you know, getting your quarterback hit that much, not a recipe for success here. I just wanted you to kind of take us through kind of, you don't have to get into strategy, of course, how you walk through that with the players and coaches and the emphasis of making sure you keep Josh Allen healthy and upright going forward.
No, it's huge. I mean, it's kind of stating the obvious a little bit here with respect to Josh and how important he is to our team, and having a healthy quarterback through the entirety of the season, how important that is, right? So, you know, that's where a lot of game plans have to start.
And speaking of Josh, he is your team's nominee this year once again for the Art Rooney Sportsmanship Award. How cool is that for a guy to kind of be nominated there, and for your quarterback who has such an important task with your team to be nominated for this award?
No, he deserves it. He's a heck of a competitor, number one, so he plays with that edge and competitive nature, but he's also, as we all know, a great person and of high character. So he's a worthy nominee, and we support him.
Before I get to the injury report, very important this week, I was remiss last week because we had a bit of a shorter week. Speaking of nominees, Steve Tasker, semifinalist for the Senior Hall of Fame. Remember the seniors that do theirs? He's a semifinalist now for the 2026 class. You've gotten to know Steve over the years. You know how important special teams are. I just want you to kind of touch on a little bit about what that means for the organization and for Steve.
Well, that's great. It's great recognition for the organization. Certainly great for Steve and well-deserved. He's, you know, I've known him better part of now 9 years. He's a class act. And, you know, remember watching him as I was, you know, growing up, watching the game, watching the Bills over the years. And it's been a true honor and pleasure to be around him now as a teammate.
No doubt. And a couple of former Panthers you coach, by the way, they're semifinalists as well. Steve Smith Jr. and Luke Kuechly, obviously, you coach. So we'll see where that goes with the Hall of Fame. But in the meantime, coach, a big game on Sunday. You have a lengthy injury report. A lot of notable names on there. Is anybody you know will not play on Sunday as of right now?
Correct. So Curtis Samuel will be out for the game. Terrell Bernard, Deion Dawkins, Spencer Brown, Joshua Palmer will be limited. Dalton Kincaid the same. And then Kylan Grable coming off of the IR situation. As I mentioned, we opened his window this week. He will be full today but questionable for the game. And then the rest of the guys that maybe there were some questions on will be full.
Okay, so obviously Deion and Spencer both out. Some challenges on your offensive line here at your tackle position. You do have Ryan Vandermark. You did open the window for Tylan Grable. How about the confidence you have in the two young guys to step in and be the next man up in these situations?
Well, it's what they're called to do, right? A lot of confidence in those guys. What they lack in experience, you know, they'll make up for in grit and resiliency and in their preparation. So, you know, we're fully confident in those guys.
And then Josh Allen has been on the injury report this week. He got a little bit banged up last week with the right elbow. I know he's been a full participant, but how'd you feel he progressed through the week?
Yeah, he's had a real good week. Looks good. He'll be ready to play.
And then the other one I asked you about was Maxwell Harrison, coach. Obviously, he went from limited to full. He has been progressing through the protocol. That looks on track for you guys?
He's still working his way. Yep, still working his way, but moving in a good direction.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck on Sunday, of course. 4:25 p.m. game in Pittsburgh, obviously, and the Bills and the Steelers, and we'll talk to you next Friday. Coach, thanks a lot. Have a great rest of your Friday and Black Friday.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sal. You too.
Okay, you got it. That is Sean McDermott, Bills head coach.
Four-man rush. Allen throws it over the middle. It's complete to Palmer. Hook and ladder, and they're going to get the first down. Up the sideline is Shakir, and he's out of bounds at the 26-yard line. The hook and ladder, baby.
One of the coolest plays of the year will probably become a forgotten play, given how the game ended. Chris Brown on the call there. He joins us now on the Western Hotline on a Football Friday. Hopefully you had a great Thanksgiving, Chris. I'm still full. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I am still very full. I might even be a little bloated, actually. I went overboard. So yeah. It's not good.
The call for dessert on Thanksgiving night is always like, oh, really? We need this, too. But then you feel like you gotta. So a lot of football, too, yesterday, Chris. Really, the Ravens and the Chiefs both losing. I guess you can even include the Lions in that. You got a lot of great quarterbacks and great teams. That it is as bad as things have gone at times for the Bills this year. I mean, there are teams that are in worse shape in terms of making the playoffs, and Kansas City is definitely one of them.
Yeah, some teams that we are accustomed to seeing in the postseason the last few years are in some real jeopardy right now. But I think by no means are they out of it because of how tightly compacted this AFC conference race is. And all you need to know as far as how volatile the last 5-6 weeks of this season are going to be for the AFC conference race. Basically, Baltimore went from 4-10 and Pittsburgh went from 10-4 last night just by virtue of the Ravens' loss. That is insane. And I think we're going to see more of that here down the stretch.
If the Bills win on Sunday, I think it'll flip right back, right? Because then you'd have both teams at 6-6. So,
yeah.
That could happen very quickly. So on this game on Sunday, Chris Brown with us on the Western Hotline, Bills and Steelers on Sunday. I think maybe one of the biggest stories, Chris, and this is yet to be determined, Sean McDermott will be on a little bit later, and we'll get some game designations, but the Bills, fresh off a game where they couldn't really protect Josh Allen, maybe not having either of their starting offensive tackles, how big a blow do you think that'll be to maybe not have one and possibly not have either, Dawkins or Brown?
Yeah, if you don't have both, that's going to be a real tough row to hoe. Not because you don't have depth at the position, but just because the guys that have represented your depth have had so little action over the last 2 or 3 years because these guys, to a large degree, have barely missed any time. The starting five has missed 2 man games since the start of 2024, and that was Spencer Brown in both cases, the Kansas City game last year and then the game earlier this season. And then you have to go back to week 18 of the year before that when Deion Dawkins came out for a lacerated hand in the Miami game and then came back in and finished. They've been extraordinarily healthy, particularly at the tackle positions, but now it's looking like Ryan Vandermark is a given to be starting this weekend, and then we'll have to see if they need to plug another player in, and there are probably 3 candidates for that role on Sunday. You're probably looking at either the rookie Chase Lunt, who's been a healthy and active much of the year, Tylan Grable, who's still on IR as of now but began practicing this week fully, and then Alec Anderson, I think, is another option because of his experience at right tackle. He was a 3-year starter at UCLA and played right tackle in college. It's not something that he projected to in the NFL, but at this point, you're in a little bit of a desperate measure, and I think he would be a viable candidate as well for Sunday.
Okay, good info on that. I didn't know he had that experience, so that could be where they end up. And the Steelers have some good pass rushers. And Chris McDermott, really, since the end of the Texans game, has talked about the hits that Allen took and adjusting in terms of pass protection. How do you think that will look between maybe how they change how many guys do block, or it could even just be focusing more on the run game, especially early.
Yeah, I'm very curious, because I think we have to believe that if both tackles are out of this game, people should remember those two guys are a pretty critical part of the run game too. You know, especially for their pin and pull schemes. I think you have to give those guys help, because you don't know in what ways, play call wise, you can rely upon them, just because you haven't seen enough of them. Not to mention the fact that it's not just going to be TJ Watt. It looks like Alex Highsmith is coming back from his pectoral injury. He's been a full participant in practice, so it looks like he'll be back in the lineup. So they'll have their bookend pass rushers plus Nick Herbig, who kind of comes in as a third wave and has 6.5-7 sacks on the season himself. So they'll have their hands full there. And, yeah, I do expect them to run the ball. Conversely, I expect the Steelers to run the ball 40 times. Mike Tomlin's going to take one look at this run defense on film and in the rankings, and he's going to just try to run the football, mix in Aaron with a couple of throws here and there, and hope his defense gets takeaways, which they've done in outstanding fashion this year. They got 20 takeaways in 11 games, and they're right near the top of the league. So that's the game he wants to play. Run the ball, get some takeaways, steal possessions away from the Bills, and hope you have more points at the end.
Chris Brown with us. It could be a slow game in that way. The Steelers, too, because they're managing this injury to Aaron Rodgers with a left wrist injury, broken bones in there, and we'll see what he's able to do. Before he even picked up the injury, Chris, what was your impression of how it's gone for him in Pittsburgh so far this year? It's definitely seemed more, I mean, he is 42, game manager-esque than, of course, you've seen from him earlier in his career.
Yeah, they got off to a pretty good start and then kind of struggled to score points here through the middle portion of the season. And so I think they're hoping to rediscover some of what worked well at the beginning of the year for them. But it's very clear that Rodgers, maybe now more than ever, wants to get the ball out of his hands as fast as possible. I think he's one of the fastest to release the football after the snap in the entire league. Very often he will throw to a spot in anticipation of the receiver getting there by the time the ball arrives. So it's very clear he does not want to take hits. I think he knows his own vulnerabilities, because he is no longer able to escape the way he used to from the pocket when pressure collapses the pocket. And we should mention, you know, the Bills aren't the only team that are going to be without without a tackle. Mm-hmm. Broderick Jones has already been declared out by Mike Tomlin, their left tackle, so they'll have a backup there on the left side of their offensive line, which, you know, is obviously Rodgers' blind side. So, you know, you could maybe dial up some pressure packages of your own and get home to Rodgers and see if you can rattle him that way.
The defensive personnel, too. So maybe no Terrell Bernard in this game. He hasn't practiced yet this week. It would probably be a surprise if he did. So
right.
Shaq Thompson and maybe three linebackers, because the Steelers, with Arthur Smith, love to play more than one tight end.
Right, and their tight ends are pretty big, especially Darnell Washington. So they're going to have to keep an eye out for, you know, the strength of the formation and how they're going to use that. But, you know, knowing that the Bills are likely to be without their two offensive tackles, maybe a receiver or two, maybe Kincaid, and knowing how the Steelers want to enter this game, I think we're looking at a rock fight here, Joe. I mean, I just think these guys are just going to try to pound on each other and see which team gives way, or makes a mistake or commits a turnover. And why wouldn't you think that way if you're Pittsburgh? Because the Bills have had multiple turnovers in all but one of their road games this season, that being the Carolina game.
Last thing for you, Chris. The receiver injuries, Palmer's got this injury, and Samuel, too. Cooks is new, so it feels like Coleman probably will get back in, even just out of necessity. I wonder if his role will be any different, because if your receivers available that have experience in your system are Davis, Shavers, Coleman, and then Shakir. I mean, I got three big-bodied perimeter receivers, and I don't know. Like, do you think one of those guys is maybe playing a role that's a little bit different?
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. I think if Kincaid is down, you know, with the extra time that the offensive staff had on the mini bye, you know, do they experiment with one of those bigger players in the slot and kind of have a big slot opposite Shakir on the other side? I think that could be a wrinkle that we see. I don't know who that would be, whether it's Coleman, Shavers. But yeah, the Palmer injury is a little bit concerning. You know, he was practicing Wednesday and then all of a sudden a non-participant yesterday. So today is going to tell us a lot about his status for the game. I do expect Coleman, though, to be back in the lineup. As Coach pointed out earlier in the week, because it was a short week, he was down again. They just went with the same guys who all performed well in the Tampa Bay game, so you totally understand it. But I think they're going to need his physical presence in this game, not only in terms of run blocking, but in terms of posting up on some of these corners who aren't afraid to use their hands and rough you up and dare officials to throw flags.
Chris Brown with us on the Western Hotline. Thank you, Chris. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk on Monday.
Yeah, to you as well. Enjoy the game.
Chris Brown with us. He'll have the call on Sunday for Bills and Steelers, a building the Bills have won once in, ever. Acrisure Stadium. I'm kind of actually not happy that I know the name that quickly now. It's Heinz Field. Acrisure Stadium. Just a disastrous name change. But I guess I've picked up on it after a few years. Yeah, the last two Steeler quarterbacks to lose to the Bills in the regular season are Duck Hodges and Terry Bradshaw. No Roethlisberger. They never beat Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. In fact, did Roethlisberger ever... He beat the Bills here in the opener. Man, did the Bills ever beat Roethlisberger? I don't think they did. 2005? Well, we all remember that one. He didn't play. That was Tommy Maddox and the Steelers' backups. 07 was Pittsburgh. 2010, 2013, 2016... Yeah, I don't think Roethlisberger ever lost to the Bills in his entire career. That's a potential trivia game. Quarterbacks that went undefeated against the Bills in their career. I wonder who'd be the next best name on that list. Anyways, Bills and Steelers on Sunday. 803-0550. Plenty of time for your phone calls now on your expectation for this game. And also whether the Chiefs being down and now staring at a possibility of missing the playoffs after losing yesterday changes your expectation for the Bills. I know it's not directly what they're doing on the field, but the two teams that they've lost to in the postseason during Sean McDermott and Josh Allen's heyday here are probably both going to miss. Cincy for sure, and maybe Kansas City. Let me know if you got a thought on that. 803-0550 is the phone number. It's Jeremy and Joe here on a Football Friday here on WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back, and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope.
It's nothing you did.
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's you, but you didn't cross me.
And the Bulldog.
Why did I choose? Why did I just stay in school?
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back to KeyBank Center. The Sabres are not playing tonight, but we're here for the Sabres and Roswell Park prostate cancer screening events. Thanks for listening. Joining us now on the Western Hotline is Will Graves. At the risk of seeming obvious, of course we would call Will with the Sabres playing the Penguins tomorrow. So we want extensive coverage on an extensive preview from Will on the hockey game.
You better open some other windows on your laptop.
You know what? Actually, though, Will, like the Sabres, we spend plenty of time on the Sabres. We've said for a long time, I think, Bulldog, not that we've had this conversation recently, but that maybe GR spends more time on hockey than any radio station in the United States. So, no, don't worry, though. We're not going to press you on Penguins questions.
Well, I cover the Pens, too. I'll just say they're, you know, they got off to a hot start. They come back to earth a little bit over the last month, and I think get to be seen whether they're the team that was really good in October or the team that's been pretty mid in November. I think tomorrow night against the Sabres, kind of a litmus test for sort of their progress. So,
all right.
There you go.
Look, same thing.
We're parked here temporarily. Maybe standing. We got the four-ways on, but I'll just squeeze this in. I've only seen the Penguins a couple of times this year, Will. I watch a lot of hockey, and I noticed right away this year Malkin was getting, like, point total was just outrageous to start the season. And I thought, that there's no way that's going to last. It's got to be someone just shooting percentages through the roof or something. Then I saw him play, and I thought he was moving around the ice like it was 5 years ago. Has he found a time machine?
I think he's found I kind of want to make some more money doing this because I'm not going to find another job that's going to pay me this much. You know, I mean, he's a prideful guy too, right? He is, he's not been playing up to his standards. A pretty steep fall off the second half of last year. He looks healthy. He's playing healthy and, you know, and he's playing a little bit of defense, which, you know, is not really his thing. So, you know, like it's, I think if you're a contending team and you get to the trade deadline and the Penguins sort of this, what we've seen the last 3 weeks sort of continues, it'll be very interesting to sort of see, you know, what the club does with Gino at that point.
Okay, well, Will, to the main purpose of our call here, this game coming up on Sunday, what's your, if it's worth exploring, vibe on Rodgers, his injury. I was surprised, like maybe most people, that he didn't play in Chicago, especially considering how much winning he's done in his career against the Bears.
Well, I mean, and considering how much, I mean, like the team said he was limited in practice, and I guess they get to set the parameters of that. I would say, in having covered the team 14 years now, like that was the most active limited participant I've seen in a practice in a long time. So I was surprised too. You know, they talked about safety being an issue. I actually asked Mike today, you know, sort of as a follow-up, was safety the final, deciding factor here? The fact that maybe he couldn't necessarily protect himself if he gets knocked around a little bit and he might sidestep the questions, because that's what happens when you lose 4 of 6, you sidestep the questions. you know, I would expect him to be available this week. He's been, you know, he's been good-ish. You know, he hasn't been, you know, he had a clunker against, you know, the Chargers on Sunday Night Football a few weeks ago, and then had a pretty good first half against the Bengals and then got hurt. And Mason Rudolph came in and everything was fine. Mason played last weekend. Everything was not fine. But the issue in that game, in my opinion, was not the play of Mason Rudolph. I mean, I think that the Steelers, you know, their formula hasn't changed. It's just the faces, right? And I think the fans here are getting really sort of tired because the formula leads you to 9-8 and 10-7 every year. It's control the ball, try to win the turnover battle, hope that you get a break or two and win every game 20-17. And, you know, the reality for this group is that Rodgers has been fine. He's actually, you know, I think he might be a little bit off. He was actually on pace to set the, you know, to break Ben Roethlisberger's franchise record for touchdown passes in a season when he got hurt, right? Wow. So he's been productive. Their scoring's up. They're almost in the top 10 in scoring, considering they're 28th in yards. That's pretty remarkable, right? I think a lot of that has to do with Rodgers' decision-making. But the reality is this team poured a lot of money into its defense, and that defense on a given week, you have no idea what you're going to get, but most of the time it's not going to be great.
Yeah, the story, I'm not entirely surprised to hear that about Rodgers and the touchdown passes, because – a lot of the book so far this year seems to be like red zone, it's getting the ball out fast, and they're productive down there. It's more like between the 20s that is the trouble with the passing game.
Well, and you know, and I asked Mike, you know, I asked Mike this today too. And one thing they really have been unable to do is stretch the field vertically. When they have gotten yards, almost all of it has been catch and run stuff, right? There was a, I mean, the fact that I can pinpoint like two down the field throws that connected and were in week 12, and those are the only two that jump out. There was one against Roman Wilson against the Seahawks in week two, and then I think Wilson again, forgive me, it was against the Packers, I believe. You know, like they can't get anything downfield, so we have to go 75 yards in 16 plays and hope you don't have a bunch of penalties and convert a bunch of third downs. And that is asking a lot of your offense over the course of a season. And they have sort of really been unable to break that, you know, kind of break out of that. That's kind of where they've been. I mean, you know, like Metcalf is getting double covered and the other guys, Calvin Austin, Roman Wilson, you know, have been unable to sort of be consistent difference makers to make defenses go, you know what, we're not going to throw two guys at DK Metcalf on every snap. So, and especially now, I mean, you know, this week, DK, look, he gutted it out last week, hobbled, played the second half on basically one leg and didn't do much. If he is less than 80% for them, it's going to be I know the Bills defense has sort of had its issues this year, but it is hard for me to see the Steelers coming out there and lighting it up.
That is interesting. Yeah, I mean, all those touchdown passes, and Metcalf has been a small, he's got five at least, but a small, you know, part of that maybe relative to what you would have expected if you knew 21 TD passes, fourth in the league. With Will Graves from the AP in Pittsburgh. Will, there's some discussion online today about Mike Tomlin's future. I guess there always is.
There's discussion every day about Mike Tomlin's
yes.
future.
Right. Maybe this comes from a more informed place today. Do you think what might you think the odds are that he's not back?
Look, everything ends, right? But they signed him, you know, the last extension that he got, which I believe was before last season. You'll remember very memorably my good friend Brooke Pryor at ESPN after they lost to the Bills in the wild card game, asked him about his status, and he stormed off like a toddler, right? And yep. That's because his people were putting feelers out there to try to put pressure that, oh, he might be interested in going somewhere else, to try to put pressure on, you know, Art Rooney to kind of get a new contract done for Mike that was more to his liking. And it did. So it's hard for me to imagine him walking away from, you know, $30 million over the next couple of years. He's a prideful guy. He's going to pay, you know, there's a chance if they get 10 wins this year, he'll pass Chuck Knoll for the most wins in franchise history. I mean, you know, I understand that the scheduled game, you know, seasons are longer, et cetera. There's more opportunities, but still, that's a pretty remarkable thing. The idea that he would walk away with a quote failed season is hard for me to, you know, it's really, really hard for me to fathom. But you know what the flip side of that is? His kids are grown. His youngest is a sophomore at Georgia. His boys are out of the house. You know, he's not old by any standards. He's what, 53?
53.
But I could certainly see him, you know, embracing a new challenge. I can tell you that the fan base here, if we end up at 9-8, 8-9, 10-7, there's going to be a lot of unrest. But I mean, if you're the Steelers, what do you do? You don't fire him, right? I mean, you don't. You can fire a guy. Like, let's say they tank here at the end and they go 7-10, first losing season in 19 years. You're going to tank? You're going to fire a guy after one losing season? The Steelers are not going to do that. So anything that happens is going to be on Mike's terms. But he is a prideful guy, and it's hard for me to imagine him going to another organization having quite the run of the place as he does here.
It's got to really be a restless fan base at this point with him specifically. Like, I feel like he probably appears like an impediment to them ever really starting over. Like, getting – it's just been – since Ben Roethlisberger – I mean, they drafted Pickett – and Rudolph was a draft pick too, and they've taken turns, but it's always just sort of your name here, whatever the best veteran idea we can come up with, plug them in, and we're going to keep going. And they've just been living in this sort of,
right.
You know, they're not awful. They're not great.
It's a purgatory of their own making of sorts, right? Because they signed Rodgers because he was their best option to make them competitive this year, which, you know, he has done, right? He has been okay. You know, I would have rolled with Mason Rudolph, and either one or two things happen. Either you somehow find lightning in a bottle, or you go, you know, 5-12 and you're picking fifth in the draft and you get your guy. I still think they're going to do everything they can when the draft is here in Pittsburgh in April to get whatever quarterback they view. And the reality is the field that looked stacked 6 months ago doesn't look quite so stacked now. There's some faces have emerged. I talked a little bit with some people in their front office. There are guys that they weren't necessarily penciling in back in June that now in November look a little more intriguing. You know, I mean, that. So you guys talk about purgatory. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Like, when you look at the roster of quarterbacks that they've rolled through and the fact that he has continued to keep them competitive and finish above 500, that's got to be coaching, right? But if you keep hitting – but if you sort of – by doing this, you're unable to identify, and look, they misfired on Kenny Pickett pretty badly. You know, if you continue to sort of run this route and you never get the guy, I mean, everybody, you know, if you speculate like what you're talking about, the just Jimmy Anderson tweet about, a coach that a long tenure coach that might be looking for another gig, and you go down the roster of guys that have been around a while, right? Well, Sean McDermott now being one of them, right? Well, what does Sean McDermott have? What does John Harbaugh have? What does, Andy Reid have? They have franchise quarterbacks. You're not going to leave that sort of situation, right? I mean, I think if they had a guy that they felt comfortable in, we would be having a different conversation. And the reality is, you know, in this league, look, if you don't have a guy back there, if you just have somebody, and they basically had somebody since Ben Roethlisberger came back from his elbow injury in 2020, you know, you're not going to break through. Not in this era when there are so many good teams with really good quarterbacks out there. So it's a tight spot. Like, you want to give them credit for keeping them competitive. The flip side of that is, you know, they've been good but not nearly good enough to what they consider to be the standard here, right? So it's, you know, it's never boring, but it is monotonous at the same time.
Well put. You know, McDermott is a version of this. Well, like he's the fourth longest tenured coach in the league now, current job. Tomlin, Harbaugh, Reed, McDermott, I think, is the top four. And while the Bills have advanced farther than the Steelers in the last 5 years, if not every year, most years, we have the same thesis.
There's a restlessness.
Like,
yeah.
What do you want to do? Just kind of run it back every year? And some would subscribe to the thinking that, like, you guys, you know, they sort of want to shake you. And be like, no, this is the best you're going to be. You've got this. This is a problem. And I think the Bills have a history, too. It's not quite the Steelers' history. There's no six championships or anything. But they probably, I mean, maybe in a different way, appreciate what McDermott has meant and what he's brought to this organization and might feel a little bit more. And they've had more success in the last 5 years, like I said, but might feel more beholden to him. I think McDermott could probably, sometimes I think this anyway, he could probably just, you know, blank check given how it's gone for him here.
Well, certainly. And I mean, you know, I think the irony is the season is sort of playing out the way that, like, the Steelers and the Bills hoped, where the Ravens have not been very good. Obviously, like, they were missing Lamar for a chunk of that time, but even like they were kind of tooth and nail with the Jets well into the second half on Sunday, right? And the Chiefs are certainly looked, at least for this year, that they're not sort of maybe their vintage self. That doesn't mean they're not going to get it together. But there's an opening at the top of the conference, right? And I think if you would ask the Bills fans and the Steelers fans, hey, you know what, in week 12, the Chiefs are going to be 6-5 and the Ravens are going to be 6-5. They would like their chances to sort of be above them in their, you know, in sort of the conference, in sort of the shape of the conference, and they'd be feeling pretty good about themselves. And it hasn't really worked out. I mean, the Bills are, you know, as you guys well know, they've been okay, but they've got their flaws, and the right. flaws don't seem to be getting any better as we get to Thanksgiving. And it's kind of the same with the Steelers. So, you know, it's I understand the restlessness. I would much rather have Josh Allen than be where the Steelers are at, I can tell you that much. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a real challenge for that defense on the Steelers defense on Sunday. I just think that, you know, Josh has toyed with them basically the last three times, three of the last four times they've played. And then the one that the Steelers won was that weird season opener in 21 which week one's always weird. And then, TJ had some crazy play on Allen late. I mean, that's a little more the unknown. I think the known now is sort of out there on the Steelers. I would think that Josh would, and Cook should be able to have a pretty successful day. But I mean, I asked Mike Tomlin today, like, does the playoff start? Cause if you look their next 2 weeks, it's the Bills here, then it's at the Ravens. If they lose both of those games, it is the path to the playoffs is almost impossible to see, right?
Interesting.
And he's like, well, I always feel like that. And I'm like, come on, man. This isn't week two, right? I think this is the Steelers season, in these next, 10, 11 days. And it's just hard to predict because, they can occasionally look great. I mean, look, they're the last team to beat the Patriots, but let's remember they needed 5 turnovers to make that happen. They won by a touchdown. They had 200 yards of total offense. They got 2 of those turnovers at the goal line as the Pats were going in for scores, right? So yep. I'm more of the – I'm not going to be doom and gloom, but I think the Steelers are more what we've seen the last 6 weeks. And even one of those wins, again, against a good team in the Colts. What did the Colts do? They turned it over 6 times. They're going to do that again this year? No. So, the problem with the Steelers is they don't see the punter enough. They don't see the other team's punter enough. Either they get stops, or the other team, or they get a turnover, or the other team scores, and that is not, Josh Allen is not going to be as sloppy with the football as some of these other teams they've played, and it's just going to be a very tough road to go for Pittsburgh.
Well, you mentioned the Bills have faced their share of challenges, and we saw on Thursday them really struggle with a pair of elite edge rushers. You mentioned T.J. Watt; he missed at least one of those recent meetings, maybe the playoff meeting with the Bills here, but. What sort of form is he in? How much of a threat is he come Sunday?
Well, look, we saw it. They had 1 sack against the Bears, and what was it? It was TJ chasing down Caleb Williams in the end zone, and then Caleb, it looked like he was trying to, flip the ball underhanded. They called it a fumble, and Nick Herbig fell on it for a touchdown. He's getting a lot of attention, and I think I actually wrote this today as I was sort of putting some of my notes together. He had he's on pace for his fewest sacks in a season in which he was not injured since he was a rookie in 2017, right? The flip side of that is, though, we've seen Nick Herbig emerge on the other side as a guy that's a legit, borderline elite, might be there by next season edge rusher. TJ's been fine. I think the problem, has sort of been that they haven't gotten much kind of from their, from the defensive interior, whether it's the interior line, or it's the middle linebackers, with Patrick Queen, who's been effective, but not a splash guy. They're paying him to be a splash guy. Peyton Wilson, second year inside linebacker, good in coverage, super fast, but gets pushed around a lot. The Steelers defense's problems are not, it's not a TJ Watt specific issue. The thing is, though, he also begged, and pouted his way into sort of being to get a contract that made him the highest paid defensive player for about 12 seconds, right? And you could say, he's going to the Hall of Fame, but he's also, he's getting a lot of attention, and the other guys are outside of Herbig are not taking advantage of one-on-one opportunities consistently enough. So it is, they're struggling to get off the field on third down. I think they're 28th in third down defense. That is just, and some of that's, not stopping the run on first and second down, and some of that is just miscues. I mean, you saw some of the little mistakes. They're not good enough to avoid the little mistakes that you make during the course of the game. There were 3 that stood out against the Bears, and to be honest, TJ had nothing to do with any of them, right? But the problem is they really, really need him to, they need him to, be crazy every week. And, teams are chipping him on almost every play. So it's really hard. When that happens, other guys have to step up. They will get Alex Highsmith. They should get Alex Highsmith back this week. And, he's obviously a veteran, experienced guy. They're paying a lot of money. And when he's on the field, he's good. But it is just, they either make these spectacular plays or they get run over. There's no just like, hey, let's just have a – let's stop them on 3rd and 4 and make them punt. That doesn't happen enough here, and that is really kind of the main problem with their season.
All right, Will, we got the Sabres in. We got the Bills and Steelers in. No time left for Pitt women's volleyball. It's a national power, Bulldog. My
they
wife's
are
friend
power.
Is on. Her friend's daughter is on the team. Her name is Bayless. And, you know, they've been close to winning it all. I don't know if they play UB, though, Bulldog. Then we would have would have the opening.
Local interest. Yeah.
They need to get that.
Well, you can hit me up if that. You can hit me up if and when that happens.
All right. That's a date. Thank you, Will.
All right. Take care, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving. Will Graves from the AP in Pittsburgh. The Bills have signed Brandon Cooks. It's just... You got to admire the Bills' part in this whole thing.
That was
the receivers.
That was in the wind enough that I showed up here with his stat page open from ESPN.com today.
Really, you were?
I saw you were up there for that. They were mentioned as, you know, like two or three teams that might be interested in signing Brandon Cooks if the situation with the Saints gets resolved, and clearly it has. And so, yeah. It was a 4-3-3 guy coming out of college.
It was in the 90s.
It was a long time ago. It was 2014. Not quite the 90s, but still.
He's
32, 33 years old.
He hasn't seemingly been able to stay on a team for very long in his career. He's been on lots of teams, been traded maybe four times, Cooks. But we don't need to worry about that.
No.
That's we don't need him for that long.
3 years in New Orleans, a year in New England, 2 years with the Rams, 3 years with Houston, 2 years with Dallas, back to the Saints.
Now to the Bills.
That's the career. Yep.
Talk about what the Bills will ask of Brandon Cooks here as we continue. We're at the arena today. It's the Sabres and Roswell Park prostate cancer screening event here until 7. Walk-ins are welcome until 6:30. 803-0550 for your calls. You want to react to this Bill signing, feel free. We're ready for you. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton. He has the facts to back up his opinions. On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
So Football Friday here on WGR, brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, call the 8s, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, Crosby's hometown fuel, game day ready since 1922. We will, though, mix in some hockey here, as the Sabres are playing today, 4 o'clock, right here on WGR. No show up in the Bulldog today, because we will have Sabres hockey against New Jersey at KeyBank Center, and they are fresh off a loss in Pittsburgh. So Paul Hamilton joining the show now. Good morning, Paul. We had a happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, how about you?
Not bad. The Chiefs losing helps, but I'm still full from yesterday. A lot of food.
Well, it's one of those deals, too. Not in our league, but another one. You know, I have Mahomes, so I got 37 points out of Mahomes, and then he lost.
Perfect.
You know?
Perfect.
How much better could it be?
Right. Yeah, the best touchdown, maybe your favorite touchdown he's ever scored, down 10 at the end of a game, because they're still probably going to lose, and you get the points. Yeah.
Yeah, so that worked out well.
That's solid. So, Paul, going back to Wednesday night before we get to today, the Sabres are back and last in the East, 9-10-4. The specifics of the game I want to get to with you, but more than that, they are just incapable of winning on the road this year, Paul, 1-6-2. And I wonder if you see something that just looks different on the road. Like, what is the explanation for their being really good at home this year and they just cannot figure it away from KeyBank Center?
Yeah, that's a game that you got to come home with points. It's as simple as that. I mean, they at worst were even in that game, and once they got going, they were the better team. You know, at first, Pittsburgh was the better team. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen had to hold them in and did. And then all of a sudden, probably about, I don't know, 10 minutes into the second period, maybe about a little bit more than that, all of a sudden, they took over and simply got goalied again. I mean, Jari, who hadn't played in 7 games because he was injured, was fantastic. He, you know, talk about a goalie holding his team in. That's exactly what he did. Because the Sabres were hitting grade A chances. It wasn't cheap shots or anything like that. They were right on the doorstep and just couldn't get anything by him. And, it was still 1-0 at the end of two periods, but then you tie it up in the third period. So here you are again. At that point of the game playing well, you've tied the game in the third period. You're playing a team you're chasing, and you walk away and give them 2 points, and you don't have any. And one of the things that really stuck with me, Lindy Ruflik, as soon as he got here for this second term of being the head coach, talked about one percenters. And he said that's the one thing that they're going to concentrate on is those little details that are one percenters. And he goes, if you get better at enough of those one percenters, you're going to be a really good hockey team. And that's where they lost that game, is those little details, those 1% percenters that went by the wayside, and at the end of the day, it killed them. And, mm-hmm. Here you are, you've taken 8 out of 10 points going into the game, and you've dug yourself such a hole, unfortunately, for the team. It had gotten them 1 point, or one, they had passed one team and tied another. That's all that did for you. Taking 8 out of 10 points, which is good. Played some decent hockey there along in that streak. Got their only road victory of the season and had to come back from 3 goals down to do it. But they did accomplish that. But they only passed one team, and they only have lost one game. So now they've won 4 out of 6 games instead of 4 out of 5, and they're right back in the cellar again. That's how bad the hole they've dug themselves is, because they played that kind of hockey, won 4 out of 5 games, which is 8 out of 10 points. Now you've taken 8 out of 12 points. That's still very good. And you now you haven't passed anybody. I mean, that's the thing. And it's just, again, it's not how many points they're behind. It's many teams they have to leapfrog. If they're in ninth place, and in this situation, we're not even having the conversation. We're not even talking about it. They could be 6-7 points down if they were in ninth place, and they're fine. You can make that up in a hurry over one team. Mm-hmm. But having to make it up over 8 teams, that's a whole different story.
Paul Hamilton with us. Paul, in the game, how much of the blame would you put on Lukanen's shoulders for that game? Or I guess of the 3 goals that he let in, how much at fault do you think he was on them?
I think Lukanen is a lightning bolt for a lot of people do not like him at all. So they have an agenda to start with. He held them into the game to start with for the first half of that game with some great saves. The first goal is deflected, and it moved a lot. And I'm reading people saying he should have had that.
Well, I guess it's
how do you have that when your defenseman deflects that puck and it moves as much as that puck did?
The complaint I saw is why he was sliding so far out to the right on a wrist shot was the thing that I had seen, which maybe there's a defense for, but
I mean, he's there ready for it. And if there's a first thing Byram did is he lifted his left leg. If you're not going to block the shot, get out of the way. I mean, what are you lifting your left leg for? Block the shot and get out of the way. I mean, but to deflect it and to make it go that far, he has no chance on that. The second goal, yes. What happened on the second goal is after he lost the stick, he's trying to pick it up and didn't get it. Mm-hmm. So now he's scrambling in the crease to try to get over. And as he's doing that, he opens up the 5-hole. Now, if he has a stick, the 5-hole is probably going to be covered. Most goaltenders will cover the 5-hole with his stick. So now he's vulnerable. So once again, Byram goes down to block the shot, and it goes under him. So now you don't see the puck until it comes out. But still, you're on your hands and knees, and you do have the 5-hole open. Mm-hmm. So even though you don't see the shot to the last second, you're still not in, in great – you know, he squared up, but the five hole's wide open because he never was able to pick up his stick and then started scrambling once that happened. So that one, yeah, even mm-hmm. though he saw it at the last second, he's still not in great shape because of not having the stick. And, you know, I'll go along with that one that, you know, if even mm-hmm. without the stick, if you got the pads together, you know, you're going to be okay. Third one, you have no chance because Owen Power again, yeah. and that's the one percenter I'm talking about, mm-hmm. you know, where what are you doing? You're right there. You're right there to pick this guy up, but you don't pick him up. You just let him come right through the slot and score. And he does that a lot. There are parts of his game that I think he's really improved at. But that is the biggest thing that just keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
He's there, but he's not covering the guy. I mean, how many times have you seen them just standing next to the guy but not tying him up, you know, to take him out of play, and the guy winds up scoring because he didn't tie up the stick or he didn't knock him down or whatever. So, you know, that's what I'm talking about with the one percenters. That, you know, the first goal, you got Timmins – it's a very simple, and as Lindy Ruff, he just said in frustration, I don't know what he's doing there.
Yeah. Do you think Lindy is, I don't know, like what Lindy's opinion might be of Power at this point? He has not recorded a point in six games. Paul, I know he's a defenseman. He's not like necessarily, that's not job number one for him, but he is supposed to put up a little bit and to have no points. And more than that, he played more than 20 minutes almost every game of the year. Until this six-game stretch where he's played over 20 minutes only once. And that might be the more telling thing, is that Lindy's playing him, you know, it's not crazy, but it's like 3-4 minutes fewer a game in this last couple of weeks.
I thought until these last couple of weeks that came along, I thought he was playing better hockey. I thought he was fine. And it just seems like, you know, it hasn't gone as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually a question I asked about Bryson after he scored that sleek goal where he, you know, put a good move on. And then Bryson scores again and actually should have, as I think, gotten the goal. And they got screwed on a replay again where, you know, it was, I don't think it was goaltender interference. So my question was, would you like to see Bryson get into the play a little bit more? You know, and enjoying the rush a little bit more. And he said, I'd like to see all of them. He goes, that's part of our offense, is the fourth guy joining. So he said, no, I wouldn't just pick him. He goes, I want them all to be in the rush like that. And so that would include Power too, that, you know, he's just not seeing it enough, you know, where, and Power has proven when he does become that fourth man, he becomes pretty dangerous. You know, I've seen him be able to score and help when he becomes that fourth man and gets up into the rush, and he just needs to do it more.
Paul, today's game, 4:00 against the Devils. Gotta guess. I feel like I'm asking you this every time they play, but what's your best educated guess on goalie tonight? Lion?
He might stick with Lukanen. My best educated guess was I thought Ellis was going to play,
right.
and he didn't. He didn't even dress, and other people thought it was Lyon. Not one person thought it was Lukanen.
Right.
And he wound up in the net. I mean, Lukanen's numbers over five games were excellent. You know, they were really – they were like 2.41. He had the save percentage of 9.11 over mm-hmm. his last five appearances. That those didn't go up because there was an empty net goal, which there always is. So, I mean, that only went up slightly because of the last game. And if you think about it, I mean, Pittsburgh starting in the second period was all over the Sabres. And for about 13 minutes, Lukanen made a lot of very good saves to keep them in. That's another thing, too. Mm-hmm. Just like you did with McDavid, really, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin weren't a factor
right.
against the Sabres. So if I would have said to you, well, they're basically going to do to Crosby and Malkin what they did to McDavid, you probably would have thought, well, they got a pretty good chance of winning a hockey game. They probably should win that hockey game. And so you hold the, you know, those two guys down, and they're Saber killers when you look at it, when you look at the career numbers against the Sabres, and you held them down, and you still aren't able to win a hockey game.
I don't think they were matched up every time, Paul, but I saw that the McLeod, Zucker, Quinn line maybe got matched up against Crosby a bunch, and when that line was on the ice, I'm pulling it up right now because I saw it, that they outshot the Penguins, where is it? Or shot attempts were 20 to 11 when they were out there, and they kept playing against the Crosby line.
And you wouldn't even have to look at that. I mean, you could have, even the eye test will tell you that. Very often, the eye test will line up with the analytics. The McLeod line was all over the Sabres. Before they even scored, they had a bunch of great opportunities. They had two great A chances before the first goal went in, which wound up being Zucker. It was originally credited to Quinn, but it hit Zucker in front. But it was, they never gave up. They just kept going, even though Jari had made a couple of really good saves right before that. So the McLeod line was very, very good for this hockey team.
Very quickly, do we know if is Josh Norris playing today, or if not, maybe this weekend?
Well, all Lindy Ruff would say is he wouldn't rule it out. I really thought he was going to play last game until Lindy Ruff said no. It's because he was in a line. He was, you know, with a line, and he was actually centering a line, Benson and Austlin in practice, and he was working in on the number one power play with Benson. They were going back and forth. So I really thought, but then we asked Lindy Ruff, and then we asked Norris first because we go to the players first, and he said there's a chance. He said that's up, of course, to the coaching staff and the medical staff. But then Lindy Ruff afterwards said, no, not this one, but haven't ruled him out for the weekend. So unless there's been a setback, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he played in this game.
Paul Hamilton, Sabres and Devils today, 4 o'clock. And thanks, Paul. We will we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
3 o'clock for pregame here on WGR. You can hear more from Paul, Brian Koziel, and Sabres, 4 o'clock. Get out of last place. Let's see how many days they can spend out of last place until the new year. 1 point behind Toronto. Keep Toronto down there. All right, back to football. We'll get Sal in coming up at 8 o'clock. Bills and Steelers coming up this Sunday. And there are a lot of injuries to go through, especially on the offensive line, which we have not really had to deal with here while covering the Bills in years. But Dawkins and Brown are both worth monitoring. Sean McDermott will join Sal a little bit later, so we'll get more details then. But he's coming up at 8, so stay tuned. This is WGR.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.